Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand how the other side thinks. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Today's topic is acquisition plans. It's a big topic, so we went a little longer than usual. Plus, we recorded this episode in a hotel room while attending the Podcast Movement Convention in Chicago, so the change of scenery may have had an effect. Okay, here we go with what is an acquisition plan? The government has decided they want to buy something. They have a requirement, and now it's time to plan, to figure out, decide how are they going to buy whatever they need to buy.
And to do that, enter the acquisition plan. We'll go over what is an acquisition plan, what's in an acquisition plan, what are the elements that go into it.
Without getting too deep. So for this, we need to jump right into FAR time. We're in FAR Part 7.
Lucky 7.
And FAR Part 7 is about acquisition planning. So the ING is actually off of what we're going to talk about in a minute. We're just going to talk about the acquisition plan, which is a small piece of acquisition planning. FAR Part 7 describes the policies and procedures for acquisition planning. And it covers developing acquisition plans, deciding whether to use commercial or to government resources to buy whatever you're going to buy, deciding whether to lease or buy, and also deciding whether or not a function is inherently governmental, which is a topic we're not even going to touch today. We're just going to start with the very first part, which is developing acquisition plans.
And that's FAR 7.1.
So 7.102, lots of FAR stuff here. Stay awake. 7.102 prescribes a policy. And it says, agencies shall perform acquisition planning and conduct market research for all acquisitions in order to promote and provide for acquisition of commercial items or non-developmental items to the extent practicable. So they want you to go commercial first if you can. Also to provide for competition to the maximum extent practicable with due regard to the nature of supplies or services to be required. So some things you just can't compete. But as much as you can, you should try to compete things. Third, selection of the appropriate contract type. And there's a whole episode on why contract type matters. And the last thing, consideration of using pre-existing contracts. So you're going to do acquisition planning, and you may end up saying, hey, let's use one of the GSA multi-award things.
Or even we won't get into the whole use of this, but there's this thing called the Economy Act where you can use contracts that another agency is already buying what you need and you can just jump on their contract. So that is something you're supposed to look for.
Yeah, so before you go out and do a whole acquisition plan and issue new contracts to buy something, maybe somebody already has a contract and you can just spend your money on their contract.
And you see a lot of that in the IDIQ, the Indefinite Delivery, Indefinite Quantity contracts, the multiple award contracts that some agency, like Soup. NASA has the SUP contract. Other agencies can order off of that. That's what they're referring to here, is the ability to use another agency's contract to get your stuff instead of starting all over again. That's the policy here.
7.102B is a very important statement. It says, planning shall integrate the efforts of all personnel responsible for significant aspects of the acquisition.
So many words in there are fuzzy, like significant aspects and integrate all the efforts of all personnel responsible.
All personnel responsible.
That's a lot of people. Or maybe not.
How many of them consider themselves responsible for it?
They say, good
Interesting.
Point.
But what it's trying to get at is, yes, contracts people are involved. Yes, there's a program manager involved. But also, you know, budget people, logistics people.
The end user.
There are a lot of players in the acquisition world. The purpose of the planning is to ensure the acquisition happens in the most effective, economical, and timely way possible.
And that's a theme that we'll hear a lot throughout FAR Part 7. But here's a fun fact in 7.102B. What it really says is agencies who have a detailed acquisition plan have kind of met the requirements of this part of the FAR. In other words, this is art, not science. There are some things you have to have, but each agency can have their own set of rules on what they define as full acquisition planning. So some agencies will require a lot of stuff. Some agencies will require not so much. But at a core, they're saying you got to do some planning. You can't just skip this step. And so what this says is that if you have your own detailed acquisition plan, you don't really have to use what's in the FAR. But you got to have some kind of a plan.
The person responsible for the acquisition plan is the head of the agency, the agency head. This is FAR 7103. And there's literally A through Y. There's 25 different responsibilities of the agency head here. We're not going to go through all 25.
That would be a very riveting podcast.
But starting out, the agency head is responsible for promoting full and open competition, or if full and open competition isn't required, then for obtaining competition to the maximum extent practicable again. So some things are, it's not possible to compete full and open. If you're working in the classified world, lots of times when you buy things that have a classified component, there's not a lot of suppliers. You can't advertise openly on FBO for classified things. There may be a limited number of companies that are qualified to supply that certain classified thing. So you're doing competition, but it's not full and open, but it's still competition, and it's the maximum extent practicable in your circumstance.
And the second thing is ensuring the acquisition planners document the file to support what contract type they used. That we talk about contract type matters, right? Well, it's paragraph D says, what was your plan for this contract type and why did you use it?
Yeah, the agency head is supposed to ensure that you do that, that you've thought about it ahead of time. You're not just winging it on that. Another one, this is actually letter T, so it's way down the list, but this is super important. The agency head is responsible for ensuring that knowledge gained from prior acquisitions is used to further refine requirements and acquisition strategies. And for services, the agency head has to ensure that if you're doing a follow-on acquisition for services, that you use more performance-based acquisition methods. So maybe not the first time, but once everybody gets used to it and you understand how this service occurs, you evolve the contract type, you evolve the acquisition plan to take advantage of that knowledge.
And this is an interesting one because this is easy to say, but it's kind of hard to do when you work in agencies where the people change a lot, they rotate in and out. Oftentimes, we just go back and look at the last time we did it. Let's just do it again, right? And what this literally requires is almost like a content management system. So I think this is where the idea of having knowledge management tools comes from. And the idea of this paragraph is understanding how are you going to be able to connect last time's contract, learn from that, and not make the same mistakes again.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
I don't know if people do that.
Don't repeat the same errors, right? Do it better next time.
Yeah, so this is a great example of this is the kind of thing that industry could probably help with when the RFI comes. I say, hey, last time we did this, here's a problem that came up. Don't assume it was the same acquisition team or same people. And they say, paragraph T says that, you know, this is the intent. You know, see if you can get some traction that way.
So that's just three. That's letters A, D, and T out of the list of 25 agency head responsibilities.
Tip of the iceberg.
Some of the other things are, you know, what kind of documentation is required for the acquisition plan? Does the statement of work align to the performance and cost goals that you've set up? That if that's a mismatch, you're doomed from the start. What else? Ensuring use of the metric system. Imagine that. It's actually in the
actually
FAR.
In there.
It's the agency head responsibility to make sure that you're acquiring things that use the metric system.
And they also have to worry about small business concerns. And then the idea there is to avoid unnecessary bundling of contracts.
Yeah, don't make it so big that small businesses can't compete for it.
Right.
So what are we talking about here? Acquisition time zone wise, we're in the requirement zone and the market research zone. The beginning of the process is where you're going through this market research in order to help build the plan and help learn industry's capabilities and try to decide how you're going to go about buying it.
And note that you don't want to discover the landmines during the execution zones. Now is the time. This is why this is such a big deal up front.
Let's keep moving through the FAR. FAR 7104 are the general procedures here. And it says acquisition planning should begin as soon as the agency need is identified, preferably well in advance of the fiscal year in which the contract award or order placement is necessary. So yes, when does it occur? As soon as possible. As soon as you find out you have a need, you should start planning for how to acquire it. It's very common that planning doesn't happen, and then it becomes an urgent requirement. And what happens then? Well, you don't have much of a plan. You have a much better chance of screwing up the whole acquisition. And if you're doing this on an urgent basis, generally you don't have time to do a real competition, and therefore you could end up paying a lot more for it.
And what you end up with is an unrealistic delivery schedule, and it's kind of like an insert miracle here, and we'll make up the time, and that creates problems with you end up having fewer companies to choose from potentially, or they're rushing and everybody's in a big sprinting hurry. And if that's caused by a failure at the plan, which we have a podcast about that, it creates a whole different set of issues. And again, you're throwing a rock in the pond that creates more problems. So that's why they tell you this up front.
And we talked before about the players that are involved in acquisition planning. The FAR requires that the acquisition planner,
paragraph C,
has to coordinate this and get the concurrence of the contracting officer in all acquisition planning. And if you think you're going to use other than full and open competition, in other words, some type of restricted competition or a sole source method, then you have to coordinate with the competition advocate for your agency and also with the contracting officer and probably also with the small business advocate.
And there are thresholds for these approvals and coordinations, we'll call them. I mean, for example, in the DOD, the small business specialist has to sign off on acquisitions that are $8 million or over. In NASA, it's $6 million or over. In the Department of Energy, it's also $6 million. And then for all other agencies, which is what it says, it's $2.5 million. So there are different flavors of this. And of course, you look at agency procedures, you'll probably see some different numbers. But that's just the small business specialist. So they're, depending on how big this gets, you get more and more, you know, opinions, in quotes.
Right. And you can't slice these things up to get it under the thresholds.
No slicing requirements.
If you're gonna divide it into multiple contracts or if you have options, you have to include those. It's the cumulative, say that right, maximum potential value of the contract that decides the threshold for these reviews. The next part, 7.105, talks about what goes into an acquisition plan. An ACT plan is a written plan that addresses all technical business management, everything that controls the acquisition, as well as the agency's procedures for getting it done. For example, if you're buying a service, the ACT plan for service contracts or orders have to describe the strategy for how you're going to implement performance-based acquisition methods, or you have to give the rationale for not using it.
And depending on the agency, that rationale can be very onerous. Some agencies are really gung-ho over making sure that you use performance-based rules.
Let's run through the different pieces of what's in a written acquisition plan. So first, the acquisition background and objectives. You have a statement of need. So you start out by saying, hey, this is why we need to buy this. And you talk about the technical and contractual history of buying that or buying stuff like it before. You talk about the different alternatives and what you've learned from prior acquisitions. The next piece is you describe the conditions that affect your current acquisition. So whether or not it has to be compatible with existing systems or future systems or programs, and whether there's any cost, schedule, capability, or performance constraints that impact your decision-making for this plan.
Yeah, so what you're really doing, you're thinking through, you know, what are our risks? What are our landmines? You know, we talk about the idea, if you don't want to discover the fact that you have a cost problem because you underestimated what's going to cost for this software 2 years from now because you didn't think about it during the planning stage. That's why these things are in here.
Right.
To get people thinking.
Cost is the next thing you have to talk about. So you have to describe the cost goals and your rationale for it.
You know, things like life cycle cost. Like, what do we expect this thing to cost for the whole life of the product that we're developing?
Yep.
Or the service that we're going to be kind of adding to our,
right.
our list of service contracts. If it's going to be for 5 years.
Or also if it's a design to cost. If you only have enough money and people are going to build something that you can buy for how much money you have.
Yeah, you know, how far can we get?
It's kind of the opposite. Exactly. Next, you have to describe the capability or performance that you require.
And you were talking performance characteristics. How fast does it have to go? How much can it weigh? How light can it be?
Right.
How small can it be? You know, whatever the...
And the next piece is how fast you need it. What are the delivery requirements for it?
And what are you willing to trade off? You know, that's one of the ones you have to be thinking about that.
Yeah, I can wait another 2 months if it can also do this.
Yeah, and if we can have it a month later, it'll cost 50% the price. You know, all of those things can be discussed. And by the way, this is not something that should be made in a vacuum. And this is a great environment for the results of an RFI. That's why we talk about interacting with industry, because they can tell the contracting officer, we can make this faster, but it's going to cost more. Or if we can do 3 a month instead of 6 a month, it's 50% the price because of, you know, insert reason. But that stuff, this is when we figure it out. And learning from doing it wrong, it's best to talk early as you possibly can.
And that leads right to the next piece is you have to discuss the risks, technical, cost, and schedule risks. And when you're talking about trade-offs, you could be trading off to lower the risk.
Yeah, to balance the risk and say this is the part we're worried about. Where can we trade off?
So the last piece that I have to mention here because I just love it.
This is funny.
This is the FAR that a written acquisition plan has to discuss acquisition streamlining. And this is why I think it's funny. It says, and I'm going to read this because it's funnier that way. If specifically designated by the requiring agency as a program subject to acquisition streamlining, discuss plans and procedures to... So, let me rewind here. Only if your agency has designated this as a program that has to do acquisition streamlining, then you have to talk about
how
you're going to encourage industry participation by using draft solicitations, pre-solicitation conferences, and other means of stimulating industry involvement during design and development and recommending the most appropriate application and tailoring of contract requirements.
Ding, ding, ding. We've been saying that all along.
Are you kidding me? You don't have to do it unless it's specifically designated for acquisition streamlining. Then you have to communicate with industry.
And what we've been saying for going on 2 years now is that we should always be doing that. Don't wait for the acquisition streamlining. But it is kind of funny that they're calling out the idea to go faster, add more steps. But the steps that they're adding should be the first
there
steps
anyway.
You're doing.
It's stunning that if you have to be designated as an acquisition streamlining program. Otherwise, just do it the wrong way. Do it the slow way.
Okay, rant over.
Thank you. I needed that little kick there.
So as an example, so this little section, this 7105A, it's the why an acquisition plan is required. This is the kind of thing as a contracting officer, put these 8 elements into your RFI and say, this is what we're dealing with, and see what you get back from industry. Because a lot of them don't know that these are the basic elements of why an acquisition plan is required. And this is the stuff that somebody who does this for a living, whatever the product or service is, the industry folks, they're in the best position to tell you what the lifecycle costs are going to include.
You tell them, here's what we think we need. Here's where we think the problems are. Here's what we think the cost should be around. Here's the kind of performance we're talking about. Here's when we think we need it. Here's what we're willing to trade or not. Here's some major risks that we see. And also whether or not you plan to acquisition streamlining. That's horrible.
And what's great about this is that there are risks that you as a company who specializes in whatever this product or service is, and you say, here are the risks inherent in manufacturing this product. Wouldn't it be awesome if the government knew that before they put out an RFP?
Amen.
That's the kind of stuff that they're not going to figure out on their own. I didn't know what it took to manufacture some of the stuff I bought until I learned by watching people make it.
And even if the government does know what it takes or took, technology changes quickly, right?
Past tense,
Last year. Some minor thing could have changed since they last had an acquisition 2 years ago that really impacts things.
Yep.
It's a great way to say it, right? Publish the outline of your acquisition plan and get help from industry who knows best what it really takes to do these things.
So that's the why.
That's the why.
And so here's the what.
The what. So there's a whole list in the FAR of what should be covered. There's 22 items here. I'm not going to read them all. But
it's another riveting podcast.
A big pause after that, but talk about the sources.
Who could the sources be? GSA, small businesses, who are you going to actually include in this? Who could the sources be who actually provide this?
What kind of competition do you envision? What contract type have you decided to select and why? What source selection procedures are you going to use?
Are you going to use LPTA? Are you going to use technical? Are you going to use trade-offs? Are you going to use prices the most important? Are you going to use technicals the most important?
And you got to document.
Yeah, you got. This is all part of the plan.
What
are
you going to use? You need to include your budget estimates and how you came up with that estimate. You need to talk about your test and evaluation requirements. Is there a specific test program that's required? Need to talk about logistics. If it's something long-term, how are you going to maintain it, service it? This is the care and feeding part of it. Talk about whether or not government-furnished property is available. If so, how much, where, when, who's going to manage it?
we're in Chicago, and that sounds coming from the Chicago Riverboat. That's funny.
Is that really what that was?
That really was one of the tourist boats.
Great.
The security considerations are a big one, is that that could be a showstopper. So.
Can add a lot of cost to the program as well.
Contract administration is a big one because, as we talk about in the execution zones, that's most of the work. You got to who's going to manage this? How is it going to be managed? How are we going to enforce it? I mean, how are you going to enforce the elements of the contract after the – and what are the costs going to be of administering it? Things like an award fee contract sounds great, but that's a lot of administrative effort for both sides. So contract administration needs to be discussed.
The Act Plan also lays out the milestones for the acquisition. So what are the steps? When are they going to occur? And last, number 22 on the list.
Lucky 22.
Who are the participants in building this acquisition plan? You actually have to, you know, finger the guilty here. Who came up with this crazy idea?
Whose idea was
this? And you got to give contact information for them. I guess that's if it goes bad, they know who to hang then.
Or more positive, if that actually is starting to build the pipeline of next time we build it, we can look back and say, who was on this acquisition plan? And by the way, one of the things we talk about in the Skyway community, we have the RFP score. And the RFP score is essentially built on these elements that we've talked through. It's a weighted system that gives different pieces more important than others.
And it kind of walks through each one of these 22 items that ACT plans have to address.
To make sure you understand them so that you can see, are you going to understand how to win this work and then how to execute it afterwards?
Right out of the FAR. Why is acquisition planning so important?
Planning is a because plan is a four-letter word.
Not planning.
Planning,
planning is not a four-letter word.
But you know, a lot of times people don't want to plan. It's the last thing we always do, right? It feels like it's not productive, but it's massively productive, especially on these bigger acquisitions, but even on the smaller ones. I mean, taking the time to plan impacts so many elements of how successful
it's the basis for the entire acquisition. This is what's going to impact you. If you're buying something big, this is going to impact you for years to come, or it's going to impact other people for years to come. Or if it's really, really big and done really, really badly, it could impact the country for decades while money goes down the drain and no capability is ever delivered. And I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, we're not going to call any names out on that.
There's plenty of programs that are examples of that.
But in reality, I mean, this is where you can discover a lot of the landmines in your program. Not all of them, but you can catch a lot of them.
It takes a long time to do this right for major programs. It does not take long for smaller programs.
And the good news is the more you do it, the better you get at it. Because you can use a lot of these templates a lot. I mean, that list out of the FAR, once you get used to explaining the level of depth you need for your agency, you get faster. I mean, the first one I did took months.
Right, but
by the 10th one, it was, you know,
quick answers for a lot of the questions.
Right.
You don't have to go very in-depth to buy many, many things. But if you are buying something big or complicated or high dollar, even if it's not complicated, there's a lot of people that may need to approve the ACT plan. It can take some time to get through, to get on that general's calendar, right?
Yep.
So I said to get on the general's calendar. I'm obviously talking about the government side and the DOD side, but any senior executive in the government, why should government people care about that? Because vacation time, summer's a bad time, holidays are a bad time. You think you have a week on your schedule to get it approved, but at the wrong time of year, it could take a month to get all the right people in line to approve it.
And think about what you're asking somebody to review a – this could be a 20-page document, but it's the basis for a longer program. So it's not something they can just look at in an hour. And people are busy, and by the time they sit down and really be able to read through it and think through it and ask all their questions, it takes a while. So – however long you think it's going to take, sometimes it takes longer. But the point of that is, or the value of that, say it that way, is that 1 hour of planning equals 10 hours or 20 hours or 100 hours. It's some multiple of that of cleanup later. And so this is where you learn where the gaps are.
And avoiding problems is so much easier than fixing them after they occur, after you figure them out.
And let me give you an example. One of the acquisitions that we did, it cost us a lot of time because we didn't clearly decide how we were going to evaluate product samples until like basically the week before we launched the RFP. And there were so many options. And part of it was we didn't necessarily know the best way to do it, but we also didn't really document it well from the last time that this acquisition was done. And product samples, when your special operations folks are buying stuff, you want to give them product samples. You want them to try them. but how to document it. Are we going to use video? Are we going to use audio? What happens if we use video? Is that going to be eligible if somebody – eligible to be able to see it if somebody asks to see the video during protest? Is that going to give away the visibility and identity of the SOCOM guys? Still, these questions are all buzzing around, right? They were answered before. So the idea is that write them down, have a plan, and then copy that plan for next time if it makes sense. That's an example. We spent way too much time tinkering with that one. And then we had another one because we didn't actually understand the entire future requirement, and we end up modifying the product. And you'll see this a lot. You know, they call it creeping requirements, right? Where you said, okay, the requirement is to buy a table that's this big. And then after we show up, we're like, actually, it needs to be 3 inches bigger. Okay, that sounds easy until you realize, well, now it needs new legs. And then now the table's big, and it changes the physics, and it just – it got more complicated. And so those kind of things to say, okay, let's build for what we think we're going to need now, but what does the customer think we might need 5 years from now? And then ask industry, how hard is that to plan for? And we didn't do that. And I wish we had, because 5 years later, we were scrambling to make it work.
Right. And sometimes even when you talk to industry and get their buy-in on everything, people just get excited and miscalculate. There are programs that the entire program relies on the availability of a certain technology. And turns out that technology was a lot harder to make work than anybody expected.
Yep.
So the whole program's building along, waiting for a certain technology to show up at a certain time, and it doesn't. And then what happens, right? Everything's shot because the plan to reduce the risks on one piece of the system didn't work out like they thought. I'm not saying that acquisition planning could help that. I'm sure that they thought they had it all licked. But if they had assessed the technology correctly, the plan might have actually closed and not, I will say, wasted taxpayer dollars there, right?
A big part of this is just understanding the schedule and communicating for both sides what the schedule is for this. How long is it going to take to get this done? And share the process with your customers. You know, as contracting officer, over time, I realized the value of sharing how long it takes to do the acquisition and showing them a detailed schedule that had 10 days for this, 5 days for this. Yes, it takes 2 weeks to get this reviewed by an SES. Even though it only takes him like an hour to read the document, from history, it's taken a couple of weeks.
And industry's dying for details on how long things are going to take to happen, right? Because they're trying to schedule. You can only write so many proposals at a time, usually one for a small company, but even bigger companies, there's only so much budget available, so much space available, and so many people available to write proposals. So they want to understand what they can bid on just from a physical availability of resources standpoint. So communicate the schedule, stick to it as best you can, but if it changes, communicate it to industry.
Let everybody
have a plan, build a plan, get your acquisition plan approved, and as that changes, just communicate it. It's okay if it changes. It probably will change. But if you do that in a vacuum, it causes more problems later. So I think I just shifted to the industry side. Why does industry care so much about acquisition planning? Because they have to plan themselves for how to write proposals, and if they win, how to actually deliver. If industry thinks that award is going to be on January 1st, and it doesn't actually occur until July 1st. It takes a lot of replanning to accomplish the same things that they put in their proposal to start 6 months earlier than they're actually able to start. So industry definitely cares about acquisition planning and making sure that the risks are accounted for, making sure that the government has a realistic budget to buy what they think they want to buy.
And honestly, a lot of this is their ability to deliver. I mean, the government folks, I never saw this as a contracting officer. So if the schedule slips a couple of weeks, you know, they'll figure it out. Well, yes, they will, but they're going to incur risk and they're going to incur costs and all that. But what really, at the end of the day, it may impact their ability to give you the best product. And I didn't think of it in terms of that when I was a contracting officer, is the impact that having to shuffle the deck chairs can create less than stellar performance issues down the road that you as the government customer, you may not see them for a year because people are moved, or that high-end engineer had to move, or this production line wasn't ready. And so there's all these things that happen that just by communicating the schedule and understanding ahead of time, we're going to be behind by 3 weeks.
Yeah, we've talked about that a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I love acquisitions where they want key personnel resumes, and you have to commit to providing certain personnel
for, like,
for
a year.
The program. They say they're going to award on March 5th.
Which they thought they were going to.
And they thought they were. And for various reasons, they don't award until November.
Yep.
Those key personnel probably aren't available. Companies can't hold on to those people. If they're actual employees, well, they're working other programs by then, so they can actually earn money for the company. If they're contingent offers, they've already taken another job if they're expecting to start in March and it didn't materialize until November. They have to feed their families too. So anyway, we got on a big rant about communication there. But this is about acquisition planning, right? Make a plan, communicate that plan. If the government communicates the acquisition plan or as much as they can of it to industry, industry can actually help shape that plan. You can help them understand that a commercial item is available for it instead of building something custom. You can help the government understand that, hey, I'm a small business and small businesses can do this, so set it aside for small businesses. Then you don't have to compete against all the large businesses.
And an example of this one is in the IT realm. We got questions from a couple of podcast listeners about the idea of the way the government buys software and buys IT support doesn't take into account how quickly IT technology improves. And so, like, saying that we'll be able to give you the same price on this 10 years from now. Well, industry is saying I'll be able to give it to you for half the price 10 years from now.
Right, but give me firm prices now, 10 years in advance for something. Yeah.
But and it's just that kind of – that's what I mean by commercialization, is understanding what is the commercial market doing and how do we implement that in our acquisition plan. And the reason this is really valuable to industry is that this is kind of the acquisition team's playbook. FAR 7105, that's the elements of an acquisition plan. So this is what they have to write about. So this is their pain that you can solve, is educate them on those 22 things or even a few of them. Because if you understand their pain, then you can help alleviate it by solving some of those problems by, you know, white papers or RFI responses, et cetera.
Wow, I think that's enough for today. Acquisition planning is a huge topic, which is why we just talked about the acquisition plan, the actual acquisition plan part of the FAR today. There are a lot of different elements to it, and if industry knows those elements, you can be one step ahead of the customer.
And ignoring these rules and not documenting them, it's at your own peril. And the reason I say that is that, you know, the less you document, the more agency requirements to document you get, right? And so here's a random example. In the DFARS, it says the program manager or other official responsible for the program has overall responsibility for the acquisition planning, right? And so now what they're saying is, in case it wasn't obvious, you, the program manager, you're responsible for documenting all this stuff. Now, in my mind, as a contracting officer, I usually was the one who kind of managed the schedule. I helped make sure that we're moving along. But the DFARS has gone so far as to say, hey, Mr. Program Manager, in case you forgot, add this to your job description. And so this is an example of somebody wasn't planning enough, and they said, okay, well, we've got to just make it even more clear that the program manager has to manage this.
Yep, no finger pointing anymore.
That's right.
Now it's the program manager's job.
That's right.
Congrats.
Guess what? Enjoy.
Okay, that's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. I should mention that this episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition Solutions. Skyway helps you know more, win more, and do more in the government market. To learn more, visit skywayacq.com. As always, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, send me an email at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us.